Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this April Fool's Day. I'd love to tell you that we had some elaborate joke. We don't. That I'm aware of.
Well, that itself may be the joke.
Yeah, that's enough. Or just not being here.
Yeah, but there you go. Or or what you're about to hear. Good morning and welcome. We love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning, Joe.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is also here.
Good morning.
And Times Union associate editor Mike Spain joins us. Always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. So let us begin with many topics. First of all, hey, Donald Trump's going to be in town.
That's right. Right nearby. Right down the road.
Right down the road.
I'm leaving town.
What is he doing here?
Should we invite him for lunch? He's going to be joining
Carl Paladino.
Oh, my God.
To take center stage at the Capitol for a rally that is opposed New York's SAFE Act. Because today is the deadline for people with certain kinds of long guns or rifles to register them with the state. Many people are, you know, committing an act of civil disobedience and are not honoring that requirement under the law, and they're there to support that and ask for change in the law, and they're pro-Second Amendment people, and there's a big rally.
Wow.
And they're expecting a lot of people.
They are. And lots of traffic jams.
But there's going to be a lot of wind outside.
Hmm.
Not all of it coming from...
No.
Warm air?
No, it might blow your hair right off your head.
Never know. All right.
He does have a stunning ability to get a publicity. I really someday have to write about that. How does he do that?
You know, joining him on the podium, as it appears, is Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive and the single... candidate that has emerged to challenge Governor Andrew Cuomo this year. And all of them will be there. The past challenger to Cuomo, always kind of wannabe challenger to Cuomo, I guess Donald Trump, he's talked about it a lot, but has kind of put it behind
him. We said on the show 1,000 times, Michael, he ain't going to do it. He's not going to do this.
Oh, he's not. Yeah, now he isn't.
No. Yeah. I said, but we predicted it was all just.
But do we see this as an endorsement then?
Of Rob Astorino?
Yeah.
I think he's appearing alongside him, and maybe, you know, we'll see what he says. He may get up and say something quite
favorable.
And is that
good for any candidate?
I was going to say, what value is an endorsement from Donald Trump?
I don't know.
It gets you lots of hits online. I know you just put that Trump name in, and it's like magic. But
I think Rob Astorino could benefit from some name recognition upstate, you know, because he's from the New York metro area, and appearing with the Donald will get his picture on the front
Donald
page. You know?
Yeah, that's good. Boy, it makes me change my mind about him.
It's all incremental. It's a long way till Election Day, and... what can they do to counter the $33 million that the governor has in his campaign war chest?
Yeah, well, that's like gum money for Trump, isn't it?
That's true. If he wants, if he really wants to endorse Rob Astorino, he could put his money where his mouth is.
Well, we don't know. I mean, you know, he's gone bust a couple of times, hasn't he?
He has. He has a very strange financial history that's been written about, and yet he still comes back. I don't want to say smart businessman because I don't think he really does business. You know,
I didn't know you were going there.
It's like the Kim Kardashian.
I
think he's like the Kim Kardashian of business.
Yeah. Well, I'll go with that.
But certainly he has some money currently, apparently, right? And that could be useful if he was going to contribute it to a campaign.
For somebody who isn't him?
Right.
Yeah. Campaign for somebody who isn't him.
Hey, I'm trying to play it straight here.
The one thing he does really well is use other people's money to enhance his own well-being, fortunes.
Yeah, I think developers do that. I think developers don't just write the check. I think they come up with the big idea. They invest some of their own money and their own capital, their own name to something, and then they go out and try to find others to kind of take the risk with them.
And, yeah, he does that.
In that regard, I don't know that that's unusual. But
no.
Let us move on to another story. The Obama administration is discussing the release of an American convicted of spying for Israel more than a quarter of a century ago. American officials said Monday
story.
As it struggles to avert a collapse in peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. The Israeli government has long sought the release of the spy Jonathan Pollard, a former Navy intelligence analyst who is serving a life sentence in a North Carolina prison for passing classified documents to his Israeli handlers. But the United States has steadfastly refused, in part because of the vehement opposition of the nation's intelligence agencies. Now, however, freeing Mr. Pollard is again on the table. Secretary of State John Kerry arrived in Jerusalem on Monday for urgent talks to try to resolve a dispute over Israel's release of Palestinian prisoners.
Is there anyone in this story? I'm sorry. Is there anybody in this room who doesn't think we spy on every country? Our friends, we know that from the NSA releases, that we spy, number one. Number two, the Israelis, it's interesting, have always regarded their prisoners as people to be traded. And they have. They've done as much as trade a single, to get a single person who is in being held by the enemy. They've let hundreds of their people go. So this is not unheard of in this whole business.
30 years ago, when Pollard was arrested, it was kind of shocking to think that Israel was spying on us. Now, of course, thanks to NSA, not so shocking at all, as you point out.
Are you kidding?
And it was so horrible that Snowden did what he did, that we were listening to Angela Merkel. Oh, well, okay, what he did kind of pales. And if it helps the talks between Palestine and the Palestinians and
one
Israel,
body.
Let him go.
Yeah.
He served 30 years. He's of no value. He's an ill man right now. Let him go. Just don't let him live in the United States. Send him to Israel.
I think that's an interesting point because basically you get into an argument not of what are you going to punish him, but he's already served 25
he's,
plus
he's
years.
He's due to come out in 2015.
Really?
And he's not well. Yeah, he has a parole. He's hasn't done anything.
He's up for parole in
yes.
a year. Which,
so we're not.
This is not giving away, you know, some huge spy.
And it's symbolic.
It is very symbolic. I guess the during the Clinton administration, Clinton was just about ready to release
Correct.
Him to get
mm-hmm. Correct.
Certain negotiations back on track, and the head of the CIA threatened to quit.
Yeah, Tenet was going to quit over.
And that stopped that, and they were able to still get some kind of an agreement, but it might have perhaps happened more quickly or maybe in a stronger way had Pollard come out, or maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it means it would have happened anyway because some kind of agreement did happen at the time. But it's a chit in a negotiation, and
And he's just not that valuable.
Yeah,
honestly,
I don't know.
You know it's interesting that Israel has made this a point that they have been after his release for so long.
They made him an Israeli citizen in the 90s.
Exactly.
You know, to
Well, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What if it was the son-in-law of Osama bin Laden who's just been convicted? Mm-hmm. Right. And we got some incredible promise back from those folks to let him go.
That's a really good point. I'll bet you that wouldn't fly. I couldn't imagine it flying in today's environment. But 30 years from now, when there's a different perspective and there's different issues, and it's a lot more complicated and the world is very different than it is right now, that might be a possibility. It might be an elderly person who's sick in a prison, and it might, you know, but other people will still be outraged at it then. You know, you don't know. I mean, you got to look at it in that perspective. But today, I can't imagine that would fly.
30 years is a long sentence. He might do more good to be freed. His freedom might mean a chance for talks that are badly needed in the Middle East. I don't see a downside to this. I do love the hypocrisy.
Yeah, you're back to Pollard again, just so in case nobody.
But I do love the hypocrisy of this when you're looking at, you know, the Snowden and WikiLeaks controversies.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go on to other issues. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Doctors Susan Boja and Cara Bador providing comprehensive hearing and hearing aid services. HearingBest.com. Fleet Feet Sports, Colony in Malta, New York. Locally owned specialty run shops featuring footwear, apparel, and training programs for all distances, all abilities. FleetFeetAlbany.com. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York. Showing Hollywood, American independent, and foreign films. And presenting London's National Theater Series in HD and digital sound. Open daily. Spectrum8.com.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Let us talk about the issue of climate change already having sweeping effects on every continent and throughout the world's oceans. Scientists reported on Monday, and they warned that the problem was likely to grow substantially worse unless greenhouse emissions are brought under control. This is the report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a United Nations group that periodically summarizes climate science, concluded that ice caps are melting, sea ice in the Arctic is collapsing, water supplies are coming under stress, heat waves and heavy rains are intensifying, coral reefs are dying, and fish and many other creatures are migrating toward the poles or in some cases going extinct. We knew this, right?
We yes. should have.
End of discussion, yes. How crazy can we be? This is nuts.
Al Gore.
Al Gore. I don't always love Al Gore, but I'm going to tell you something. Yeah. He was dead right in An Inconvenient Truth. I mean, when he showed the waters coming up over at Battery Park, you know, years before Sandy.
And again, how many years ago was that? And we have done little or nothing. We continue to come out with reports. The stage continues to be more and more dire worldwide. This country has done little or nothing. We can't even get our act together to go to half of the treaties and or to the conferences and what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, conferences, treaties, negotiations,
summits.
Whatever.
Summits. That's the word. Yeah. Thank you very much, Rosemary. So. You know, you wonder
what? No, I'm sorry. That was a joke.
This is a serious topic.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
But I think one of the problems is that there are some people who say it's inevitable and there's nothing we can do about it. And there's a small segment that says that it's just a trend that's going to reverse itself. And because that clutters it, it is expensive. It does cost a lot of money to change things, and it's just all of those elements build resistance to it, both ignorance and resistance because people are selfish and they don't want to spend money, and then the belief that there's nothing we can do.
It would be fabulous if everybody got together via Al Gore and said, okay, we're going to act in unison and do something. I don't see that happening. In the meantime, there's tons that can be done, and that is being done on a smaller basis. Even in New York, I got to say, Governor Cuomo's put some money and some planning into the seawall around New York. New York and New Jersey were absolutely battered by Sandy, and that could happen again. And Vanity Fair has a fabulous article about what's going on to rebuild the underground structure for that, for those sorts of floods, which can be expected again. New Orleans, you're seeing money going.
I've been there and seen
Miami Beach is another. Miami is another place that's very vulnerable, and they ought to be spending money. Let China and the U.S. and everybody fight about what's happening. They're getting hammered now. And then you have places like Bangladesh and the Maldives Islands and islands in the South Pacific where they're actually buying land on other continents because those people are going to have to move. We're talking like Star Trek episodes where a planet blows up and you have to move someplace else.
Yeah, but you're talking about work that's being done to mitigate global warming's effects. What has to happen is a broader steps to prevent it from
We may be beyond that.
Yeah. That's right.
That's what I was saying. Some people think that's...
I mean, you talk to the many environmental scientists say that...
We're over the tipping point?
You know, you ask that point. You ask that question about optimism, and there isn't much.
Yeah.
I'm always worried about the people who oppose it. So maybe
They're going to drown, too. They're going to run out of food, too.
You know what? You know what? Yeah. You know what? It's not them. My question always is, don't they have grandchildren?
Sure.
Don't they have children who are going to... So let's say they have some doubts as to whether or not this is true. But there's enough scientific evidence so that the fierce opposition that comes from some of these people is wacko. I mean, it's really wacko.
I have a very conservative friend
who
posted on his Facebook page last night. He said, "Happy birthday, Al Gore. Here's to blowing out your 66 candles with an exhaust blast from your private jet, you hypocrite. By the way, nice prediction on this super warm weather we've enjoyed this winter."
That's ridiculous.
That is what, okay, but that is a very popular fought within the conservative movement.
But
and my question is, but that also seems to be pervasive throughout the world, not just us, but throughout the world. We're not the only ones putting our heads in the sand on this.
But we can measure what's happening to the ice caps, and we can measure the depth of the oceans. And we can measure Samoan islands.
The intensity of storms that have hit over the past 10 years.
Right. I mean, and by the way, I think the progress on this may be, you guys know more about these words than I do, more geometric than arithmetic in terms of the progress. In other words,
it's happening much faster than
yes,
it is. It's happening much faster than scientists originally predicted, and they say within 20 years. That's our lifetime. Forget our children and grandchildren. Mm. That's within our lifetime. We're going to see major changes in weather if we haven't already begun to see them.
But can you use logic and evidence and science to convince people who have the who are just angry on a ideological perspective? I mean, like that what your conservative friend wrote about Al Gore. You know, I mean, obviously
I considered blocking him. I will admit, but I didn't. Okay, go ahead.
But that's okay. I mean, I think it's useful in this conversation because it shows how people will use cynicism and their own political perspective to dismiss what is reasonable and completely verifiable and documentable evidence that shows that things are going bad quickly.
I think nothing is going to work like fear, and that certain people will plan and be ready for it. And when things hit such a horrible situation that no one can deny it, then you're going to begin to see cooperation. I hope that's not too late.
So, but what do we get out of these reports? That's what I don't understand. Like, every once in a while, UN checks in and says, oh, things are still bad. I mean, do they have to do that? Or is it just like...
What else can they do other than completely, dominate the conversation with
evidence? Okay, but what's wrong with saying, but we need to do this and this and this, and nothing has been done since our last report? That's what I would like to read.
Well, because there's a political... You have to motivate people to do things. I mean, World War II comes along, Marshall Plan... afterwards, putting everything together. Nobody was going to do anything until the moment that arrived.
Schoharie
Ridge falls into the...
We have like 10 seconds. Well, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation on this and other topics. We love for you to be a part of it. It's roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, all here welcoming your thoughts. Again, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation after this break from NPR News. This is a very delicate balance that goes on because we have great bumper music sometimes and you want it to play for like 2 or 3 minutes, but but we only actually get usually about 30 seconds because, they want us to talk and not just play the music and rights issues and so forth. But sometimes it's really hard. You just want to let it run, Welcome back to our discussion. Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, our guests, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, where we have a couple of letters.
Yeah, Kara writes, great article in a recent Orion magazine on reimagining infrastructure, the city and the sea, or ways to cooperate and incorporate nature to protect the populated coast. An alternative to building walls is building dunes and habitat for oysters and choosing human building sites with care, right? And then what else did we get, Joe?
We got the one about climate change. Did you get that one?
Okay. And then there is the Pollard release.
That's one.
So in order to get Israel to negotiate in good faith with the Palestinians, we have to release a spy / traitor. Sounds like we are dealing with North Korea rather than an ally. And then he writes, Jim, a liberal Democrat from Malta.
Okay. And then did you get the one on the global warming conversation?
No, you read that one.
From Lisa, what makes you think that people can be persuaded by scientific evidence of global warming when many of them are the same people that don't even believe in evolution?
Yeah, that's fair point. That's what I was going to start to say when we broke it, that this is a new thing, a relatively new thing, that science can be disputed. It's like no more than politics, and that's crazy. It used to be you brought all the UN scientists together and said, oh, we better act, and people would want to act, and now it's we get comments like, oh, who are they working for? Very, very bad.
Damn well said, Rosemary.
John checks in and says, oh, really? Cold winter? Tell that to Australia. They had a heat wave after heat wave with temperatures above 100 degrees all during November 2013 to February 2014 period, which is their summer. Tell that to your friend, Joe.
Oh, right. But you take a global view. How silly of you. You're supposed to look narrowly. Just it's the weather in your city that counts.
And Gail writes, the transition movement started to develop community resilience in the face of challenge of increasing cost of fossil fuels, climate change, and economic uncertainty has a thoughtful mantra. Quote, if we wait for the governments, it will be too little too late. If we act as individuals, it will be too little. But if we act as communities, it might just be enough just in time. We can, in capital letters, make real changes if we work with our neighbors, other communities, and groups. From it's Guy, G-A-I. I'm so sorry.
And did you see Lucas?
No.
What did it take for Germany or the Mayans or the Easter Islanders or et cetera, to recognize the catastrophic errors of their ways? All right. So we thank you very much for your letters. Keep them coming. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have hit a deadline when it comes to Obamacare and signing up. There were a few hiccups along the way yesterday as the website hit capacity and went down for a little bit, which, of course, made a lot of news outlets very happy. However, in the end, the White House is saying that they believe they have hit their 7 million target. Whether that is whether, you know, when the dust settles, we'll figure it out. Rosemary is shaking her head.
Yeah, the numbers are so insanely crazy. First it was 7 million, then they dropped it to 6 million. Now they're not sure if what kind of people those 6 million or 7 million were. Are they young, healthy people, which will help the whole process, or is it a bunch of old people signed up to Medicare and it won't make any difference? It's not a good performance. We should not be happy about this.
I don't know about that. I'd take another look at that. Of course. Well, that was condescending. But I, you know, but I think that here's a guy. He puts all of these people on the rolls. We hope that everybody will sign up. I think that the only way we're going to be able to truly evaluate the monumental effort that has been made here is to wait a couple of years and see what has happened. And I think there are people who have made it difficult. We know that. We know that the Republicans, for example, have said over and over and over again in real propagandistic fashion, it stinks. Obamacare's bad. Obamacare's bad. Obamacare's bad. Pretty soon, people begin to believe that stuff. Rosemary, I take some. You know, I mean, I think there have been problems, but I think you have to truly understand how this is all worked out and why it's worked out this way.
I do recognize that every big system has startup problems, but what we're being treated to is just, it's propaganda. You called it a few hiccups, Joe. Give me a break. You know, these were massive systems set up to handle numbers in the millions, and they couldn't handle it. That's more than a hiccup. That's incompetence.
Joe. Well, I don't, you know, in the end, but I think in the final day, they was offline for a while, and people were saying, well, certain people were getting messages, other people weren't getting messages, and the problem was quickly took care of itself. I think that is a product of technology. I see that more as a hiccup than as a fundamental problem where the site has crashed for an entire day and people can't get online.
You know, the problem with these guys are that if they say, okay, we were just kidding, you can sign up anytime you want, then people will wait longer. You saw the massive crush. So now we see that, you know, they come up with these things. If you got a message and if it said that you have to get online, then you can take some more time to do this, because otherwise the whole exigency for getting people to sign up is gone.
Well, it'll also be interesting to see what happens to all those people who should have signed up who did not, not for technical reasons, but because they simply
whether they get fined or not.
They'll get fined, and it's not a huge fine, and then they can also sign up for private programs private insurance. They still have other options, and you know, I think you're, I agree with you, Alan. It's going to be a couple of years before we can really properly assess how or whether this has been a success. And a lot of it will have to do with how the public continues to look at it. And if it's so negative and if it's so vitriolic and it continues to be the subject of the midterm elections, you know, I think it's going to be very difficult for it to be successful. But there seems to be, polls are showing that people are, you know, not hating it as much, and more people.
The more they understand about it, the more
That's right.
What you're going to have
of how it affects them.
Yeah. Right. When you see some success stories, if there are truly success stories where people's lives are made better and they can point to those and more people sign up because of it, that will define whether this is really a successful program.
A lot of effort has gone into pulling aside the myths, the kind of disbelievers and the critics that have been appeared on television and on ads, and a lot of work has gone into looking at their stories and pulling them apart. You find that they're not true. They were not denied aid. They were not denied insurance or given it to it at much higher prices. There's a lot of work that's just going into getting rid of the bad propaganda on this program.
Well, here's a letter you're not going to like, Rosemary, from Deb, who says that the problem was too few states did their own exchanges, so true. Fed Exchange was overwhelmed.
That's true, and that's been known from the very beginning. There's actually also now some state, which I can't remember what state it is. Maybe one of you can backstop me here. One state just said, okay, we give up. Ours isn't working. They were going to dump it and start all over again using a copy from a state that had
Connecticut.
Worked.
Everybody has been copying Connecticut.
Yeah, yeah. Connecticut has worked
very
out.
Good
governor over there.
System. Yeah, I mean, in New York.
But I mean, this is the sort of thing. I know this is harping on it. Yes, we have to go forward, but wow, this could have all been thought out ahead of time. It's not my forte to think of these administrative things, but when you put in a program like this, wouldn't you want the really best administrators and testers and people who could have made this all happen more smoothly? I continue to regret it.
If I was Obama, I'd be pretty angry about
that. Well, he's been let down by the people that he chose to run this for
him. But that's how we evaluate our public officials.
Oh, sure. And I mean, to have told him or to let him go out there and repeat that if you like your health care, you're going to keep your health care. I mean, anybody who would have let him get that out more than once wasn't serving him well.
Right.
And but in New York, it did go pretty well. Almost, a million two are signed up, and it launched pretty well. New York Health was a successful program. Yesterday was the busiest day they had since it originated back in October, mm-hmm. and with the people that initiated the steps, they expect to have maybe perhaps 1.2 million or a little more. It's been getting a lot of praise. Good government groups are praising the Cuomo administration's rollout of it. So it can work. Its proof will be in the pudding, and when the track record is looked back at, that will define how it goes forward, I think.
Well, Mimi wrote and said, despite the numbers, how many have paid? In other words, how many people that were buying health care already were notified that were canceled due to the system? The New York Times ran some numbers. Thanks for Mimi. Got it?
Got it. I don't have the answer to her, but
no.
You know, these
are
all...
We read the letters. We don't have to have the answers.
Yeah, good questions. Yeah.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. And Joyo's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. JoyosJewelers.com.
Doesn't matter what I do. I've
Welcome back to our roundtable panel and our discussion this morning. You know, there's every once in a while there's those stories that you realize that have been sort of burbling and you haven't discussed them. And I realized as I was reading the paper last night that we hadn't talked about the Secret Service scandal. And I think we should because it's an amazing story. So yesterday there was a new development. Obviously, the boss, the Secret Service director, Julia Pearson,
the first woman ever,
the first woman ever,
naughty boys,
has been under fire. And so yeah, 150-year history of the Secret Service, first female ever to run that agency, and certainly should have been somewhat. Triumphant occasion on her anniversary, and yet scandal. Three of her agents, as the president had his overseas trip, the agency has been in crisis mode. Three members of the president's protective detail had been dismissed from the trip after one passed out drunk in a hallway of Obama's hotel.
Come pick this guy up, I think was the call.
Just like camp, send somebody home.
It's you know, there are elements of it that are slightly amusing until you realize that these are the people who are, you know,
between him and
yeah. Right. And what happens? How does that happen?
Well, there are drugs in the world.
People get drunk. but you know, that you don't know it, that there isn't.
The last scandal was in Cartagena, and it was prostitution. These are the
human foibles.
I was going to say male foibles. These are young men. They're hot. They're big. They're buff. They're important. Women throw themselves at them. These things happen. They need to be disciplined and thrown out of the service because it's understandable. Yeah, I don't think it's like a horrible end of the world.
It didn't get
but I
that
don't
way
want
overnight, though. I mean, it's a culture that must have been tolerated for a long time. It just didn't start. I can't believe it's suddenly our Secret Service agents, when they go to advance work, are just now engaging in partying before.
I don't think it's anything new. I bet this has always gone on. There's just better coverage of it now.
I bet there's been lots of incidents like this that have been covered up, and now things are more transparent, and these things get out. And
you know, it's horrible because somebody's going to be reading this who shouldn't.
Yeah.
And going to be saying, you know,
I bet they're counting on it anyway. I mean, if you didn't count on, for example, weaknesses in our military for this sort of thing, it would be crazy.
I don't know. These are
young men, young women. These things happen.
Congressional representatives who are calling for investigation say that it is a frat boy culture, that there is little accountability, and there isn't much discipline. So you can pretty much do what you want to do because you're at the top of the food chain. And as Mike indicated, that's a difficult culture to, I think, try to dissipate.
It's hard for me to believe that there's rules in this Secret Service that allow for this. Drink as much as you want, and you can have women, too, and then just come back and protect the president. I don't think the rules are allowed that way. I think it's just that they're powerful.
You got to be tough. I mean, the people who are running the agency have to be tough.
Yeah, well, you have to have discipline. You have to have
accountability. Mom in charge has to, like, get rid of those guys.
Well, now that it's come out, and I think that's the best thing can happen, sunlight really does disinfect. They can't ignore it. In the past, if they covered it up, all it did was perpetuate it. This is, you know, what happened in the last couple of years with these embarrassments. And, you know, they represent the U.S. You know, they go out ahead of the arrival of the president and kind of set things up. And you know, it's very embarrassing.
You know, popes get shot. The presidents, like Reagan, get shot. It's a terrifying thing. I'm just really grateful that Obama, with everything that's going on in this country, all of the vilification, everything else, has not been heard. I really think that's wonderful.
You've covered presidential visits, you know, the level of security, and you know how many guys are standing there with their hands and, you know, their fingers in their ears talking while you're walking around. And
Didn't stop Reagan.
Well, I mean, I think that there is an established, successful, mostly successful
It didn't stop Reagan, but it did stop him from dying.
Yeah. I mean, they got him right to the hospital.
You know, I mean, like they pushed him out of the way. I mean, in that case, it really did work. And the other thing, too, is you think of what?
No, I mean, you can make the case that they got him to the hospital fast, but he got shot.
No, he did.
And he almost died.
But they got him. They knocked him down to the ground, and obviously the agents were hurt in the process as well. But I mean, to Mike's point, 6,500 people are in this agency. When you cover a presidential visit, you have that feeling that all 6,500 of them right. are there.
You do.
You know. So when you have three people who are drunk, there are a lot of other people who are there who are hopefully are sober and are doing their jobs.
And they must be pretty angry.
I would I'll think so. They said the morale is at a record low within the agency.
Who's pretty angry? The other agents. Name has been besmirched. Yeah, it's stupid.
Well, not only
it's
besmirched,
just stupid.
They've endangered everybody. I want to point out to Joe that you know you got Brady and all the other people who really got hurt quite badly.
The president almost died. He was saved by a surgeon. You know.
Yeah. So we go back to stories happening in our region, and Mike, let us talk about this interesting story about the lab plan, Governor Cuomo's plan to fund
this lab. It's part of the story of what it means for the greater capital region, the state budget, which was, I guess, passed by midnight last night and will be signed today or may by now have been signed by the governor, a fourth straight budget on time after years of late budgets.
I have great objection to this.
Right. I know that you spoke extensively yesterday.
You know how I feel. No, I don't mean that. You know how I feel about this. People know nothing about state government, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's appalling. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that the newspapers, all of us and all of the media has done is late budget, late budget, late budget. So when they get a budget done on time, we all say, hooray, look at the efficiency. But people still don't know a darn thing about what's in there.
Well, that's the point of the story that Jordan Carlio Evangelist produced for us today, and we put on the front page, and that was sort of the winners and losers around here. And one big proposal that was in the budget that got yanked out at the end was a $600 million project to consolidate all of the state health labs, the Wadsworth labs, which are scattered around the capital region into one place, a new efficient place. It was
right up the road.
It was right up the road at the state office campus, the Harriman State Office Campus, and that didn't fly. But some other,
Wait. The most important thing about that one was that there was a unique financing.
It was a very different approach,
which was the Cuomo Republican view of how to do things, which was that he was going to get that to be privatized, basically. Right?
Exactly. Private entities were going to put up the money. The state was going to pay back the private entities to build it, operate it. It would fast track it. It would get it going, and they'd operate it under like a 30-year contract, which some people were worried the state really didn't know enough about, and it might end up being more expensive that way. And that kind of
are you really sure on any of this that if Andrew Cuomo really wanted it, he couldn't have had it?
Well, it's one of those things that happens in that final weekend or the final days before the weekend. That in this case. But some other things did happen that are favorable to the region. There was an increase, a 27% increase in what localities will get from the revenues of the Racinos. In Saratoga Springs at the harness track, there is a video lottery casino, or Racino as they call it. You know, this precedes, of course, what will happen down the road with a real casino. But they had that cut, their take of that cut. It was sold by the state as a way to, you know, pump money into the localities, and then the state withheld a lot of that money while they're restoring it. And it's going to be like $500,000 for Saratoga Springs. It's going to help Saratoga County. And, you know, that's a good thing for the region. You know, so there aren't you know, all bad things in the budget. There's some good things for the capital region, and some school aid was up and some other areas. People are happy. You know, enough people may be placated by the budget that they're not angry at the governor. We'll wait and see what happens.
No,
he's
a strategic genius. He knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
We just have about 3 minutes left, and so not a lot of time, but do we want to talk about Dave Camp not running again?
Well, he's one. You're talking about the congressman.
The congressman who's the head of the
Representative Dave Camp, Michigan Republican, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, announced Monday that he would not run for re-election to spend
more time with his family.
That's a very powerful position. I mean, that's one of the top
positions.
Well,
his term was up, though.
This is setting up Paul Ryan.
That's right. Mike, you put your finger right on it, and that is, after how are you going to keep him on, after they've seen Paris, how are you going to keep him down on the farm? Your term is up. when the Republicans came in, one of the things they did was put term limits on who could be the chairman of a committee. And if your term is up during that time, what's next for you?
This, to me, is setting up Paul Ryan. He's going to move into that committee. That's another powerful position. I think it's setting him up for the future.
I keep hearing rumors that the speaker is not going to run again.
Well, his loss, Kemp's loss, is a loss for another loss for Boehner.
23 Republicans in the House have said they will retire at the end of the year, or seek another office, or take another job somewhere else.
I don't think this is an easy job, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, being a congressman or being the leader?
No, being a congressman.
Yeah. And it's grueling, and it's difficult also because you can only do so much unless you're in a powerful position like the leader of a major committee.
That's why so many assemblymen go to New York to be city councilmen.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
Because they don't have to leave their families for 3 or 4 days a week, you know, and get out of there. So it's always been a fascinating. And then they said to the New York City Council, you can only be here for a certain amount of time with term limits. And still people leave the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're only one of many, it's sometimes, and you don't hold a powerful position, sometimes it's, I can see why that would discourage people.
I think there's something going on in the House of Representatives. It's becoming more and more not just conservative, but very conservative. And you pair that with not good things happening in the Senate, and we're going to see a very, very conservative legislature.
Next 2 years,
In Washington.
We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who checked in. We'd love to keep the conversation going. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. My thanks to Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain for making up the panel this morning. Thank you all, and see you. And again, Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.